We are 1 minute after starting time. Can I ask staff to try to round people up from outside? Can we please have at-large people seated? Since we don't have the NOMCOM staff here yet, there's another issue we need to discuss. Maureen and Ali. Olivier. Eduardo. Before we start the formal meeting, after this meeting, we have the ALAC meeting with the GAC. But in parallel with that is the discussion on the budget and operational plan. And I'd like to take a quick poll of who plans to be at the GAC meeting and who plans to be at the budget and planning meeting. I don't think we can afford to skip either.
Which one do you want to say?
Well, I have no choice but to be at the GAC meeting.
Budget.
Okay, anyone who didn't put up their hand is at the GAC meeting. Thank you. It would be nice if we have a few ALAC members with me. As long as we have roughly half split 50-50 on ALAC members and regional leaders, I think we're okay. But do we have any input from NOMCOM staff where the NOMCOM leadership is? I see a number of NOMCOM members in the room.
Today, the program are so packed. Probably the previous meeting is just conflict with your meeting.
I understand, but we have another speaker coming afterwards on a rather critical subject, so we're not going to be able to run over the time. This was described as NomCom leadership with us. I don't know if they have the pitch, but if any NomCom member here would like to speak, I'll be glad to start the meeting if the recording is started. Can I have confirmation that the meeting is formally started and the recording is started? Yes, I see someone with a hand way back there. Please go ahead.
We have Sandra Hoferichter speaking from the NomCom. We have a WhatsApp group, and I just were asking where they are, and they said they're running late, and leadership will be here shortly. But I think in the meantime, as various NomCom members are in the room, I see Nadira, I saw Aziz, is he still there? And myself, so. And we also have our review team. Maybe we... No, you're not from the review team, don't you? So, sorry, I mixed faces.
I'm from the review team.
The review, NomCom, NomView...
I'm only one of the chairs, so
okay.
Yeah.
So, let's either change the agenda or make use of the people in the room.
Please go ahead with whatever you can. I think in the vernacular, fake it. whatever you can.
Okay. So since this is my community, the ALOC, and I'm very happy to be back, and I'm also a second-term member on the NomCom, I take the guidance from my former chair and...
Itch it.
And pitch it. Okay, so as I said already, it's my second term of the NomCom, and this meeting is in particular interesting and important for us to do outreach activities. The current numbers of applications which we reviewed... Oh, and I see my chair is arriving. The current numbers of applications we received need to be improved, and especially we need to have much more applications from the Latin American region. And I would like to encourage all the people in the room, and in particular those from the Latin American region, to set up an application. You will still have time to do this until the 19th of March, just to say, hi, I'm interested. And then you will have another week until 26th of March to complete your application. And with this, I see that the leadership team is arrived. I hand over to Zahid and Damon, and I just finished that sentence, so there was nothing else secretly I could explain here.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much, Sandra, for doing that. I really appreciate it because we were running late coming from another meeting. You can imagine that there's a lot of conversation about us, so we're having to answer a lot of questions, that's why. Why don't I let you decide how you would like us to proceed further?
The meeting is yours, but at this point, officially, it ends in 10 minutes. And we can go a little over, but we have another speaker and a rather relatively critical issue to discuss.
Sure.
So,
yeah. Can we go quickly through the slides if you've got our slides up? Who's managing the slide deck?
The tech guys, it's coming right now.
Next. You can do this, can you? Oh, perfect. Thank you so much. So I won't waste your time with what we look like, and I believe Sandra's explained the slots that are open and the ALAC, if anybody else knows exactly what these things are. 3 board, 1 GNSO, 2 ALAC, which are geographically limited, and 2 CCNSO seats. One thing I wanted to clarify, which we've realized doesn't actually socialize, you don't need recommendations from these groups to apply for these groups. You don't need to come from these groups to apply to these groups. And the funny thing we heard from folks was, well, I didn't apply for the GNSO because I got nothing to do with the GNSO. They won't recommend me. I was like, no, not at all. You can be anybody and apply to this, which is something that I think it's important. We thought it was understood, but I guess it bears repeating. As you can see, last year we did very well, moving from 19% women who applied to 36% women who've applied last year. Our numbers this year haven't come in. We're hoping for better numbers this year. But as you can see, we're making year-on-year progress thanks to many people, especially the DNS Women's Cocktail, many of the other events that take place at ICANN, and a lot of the ladies who actually worked last year based on the hard work HP did. He's our associate chair and chair from last year to make sure that the numbers on that really increase. And you can see that the positions we filled from 29% went up to 50% as regards women last year. Well, hopefully we're going to do as well, if not better, this year. Yeah, 50% is a good number, you're right. Now, you've seen what's up there, and we noticed that, excellent, it's March 2018. Somebody fixed that. Thank you. We had a typo on that screen. So you can see that now we have, for the first time, a constant website called nomcom.icann.org. We used to be icann.org/nomcom 2016, 17, 18, 19, 20, and so Google search was a disaster with that. So we've changed that. By the way, you can suggest people if you don't want to, if you think that someone who's useful and you'd like to send us a name of a person we should reach out to, please do that in the last link below. Now, very quickly, what I want to do is talk about the improvements we had this year. We've noticed that we have great responsibility, but no power to some extent regarding our own operations. We noticed that the NomCom's destiny seemed to be predetermined before its birth. And that we had a groundhog day because we couldn't fix this every single time, every year we were confronted with the same problem. At least the 5 years that me and HP have been on. And so we couldn't basically do anything else but hire the same recruitment firm or not have a recruitment firm every single year. Our budget was unknown to us. We had no idea what a budget looked like. We didn't know line items. And we had no control over the budget because staff would make the budget 11 months in advance before we were birthed. So we had no control over it. The assessment firm also, we couldn't choose, except we had one choice. You take that or you leave it. Our schedule, how many meetings, how many face-to-faces we wanted to have were not in our control. So basic operational planning was completely out of the hands of the NomCom. And that's basically partially a bylaw problem because by the time we actually seat, it's too late to make those decisions a year in advance. So this year we implemented certain improvements. On our birthday, we took all the decisions literally on that day and communicated them to staff. So we didn't wait for weeks to do that. Literally on the first day, we tried to be as efficient as possible. I don't think we can be more efficient than that. That literally the first day we see, we pre-planned, pre-discussed, and we took decisions then. We forced a partial budget reveal that gave us some numbers, some interesting numbers about what different services that we were getting, how much they cost. And we tried to find money within that budget. This is important. It wasn't additional money, but money within that budget to be able to do some new stuff. So we changed our assessment firm. We have now decided, and let me sort of give you an example of how we used to do selections. Initially, what used to happen was that folks who were on the NomCom would look at the applications that used to come in, 100 odd or whatever, and would online rate them. So 1 to 5. If I like candidate Mr. X, I give him a 4. If I like candidate Y, I give them a 3. And we'd do that sitting at home on our own. And that led to a number. That number became then led to a cutoff. And what usually ended up happening was based on that rating mechanism or polling, as we used to call it, folks who fell below that cutoff number would not be considered as much as the ones above that number, naturally speaking. You could pull people up if you thought they were interesting, but really not every candidate was evaluated in the same way. So we changed that. We said this year we're going to look at 100% of our candidates, and we're going to discuss 100% of our candidates. We're going to do that. We're going to do the rating still, but that rating is not going to eliminate people. It's not going to lead to a number which is arbitrary, and we cut people off. So every single candidate who applies this year, no matter what their criteria is, will get consideration, full consideration, face-to-face meeting with the NomCom. And that's a big change. Let's see if it works, but that's something we're trying to test out this year. And there's a lot of enormous cooperation from staff in order to make that happen. We have for the first time a job description which has been approved by what we call the experts, i.e. the board itself. So we sent what we thought would be the job description of a board member, sent it to the board. They made their edits, sent it back, took a while. And I think we have and it's on online now, that job description. So you can see, you know, when people apply, this is not just what we think the board requires, but what actually the board feels that this is what their job looks like. We also had a problem. We also decided to create criteria before we get the application, so we're not building criteria based on the applications we receive. And so the job description was one aspect. Quality and skills that Jonathan Cohen, who's in the audience here, and his team worked really hard in setting together. So there's a lot of work this year. In the last 4 months, we've done even before the applications came in. Very hard work that our committee has done. So we have now a list of qualities and skills. And we have the board guidance we receive every year from the board. And that basically is the criteria we're going to select against. Now, instead of survey monkeys, we are doing deliberations, as I mentioned. We're actually going to be doing proper face-to-face. And we've had some tech problems. So even online calls where we would otherwise deliberate were such a challenge, especially last year, where, just to give you an idea, one-third of the call was stuck on. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Hello? I can't hear you. Hello? You sure? Okay, all right. That was the problem. And that was one-third of the time we wasted on the calls, literally. So we call it, because it's only us who's having this problem, we call it the NOMCOM ghost. It is specifically just a NOMCOM problem. Anyway, so we're going to change that. Hopefully this is not going to be a problem this year with those face-to-face deliberations. We've doubled our recruitment capacity, and we have a long-term strategic plan for RFPs for a pool of recruitment and assessment firms from which we're going to be able to pick. And that will be Damon next year. He'll have that ability to do that because the RFP process is taking place this year. Everybody used to call NOMCOM as a black box. Well, this year we're going to have, at every single stage, people who are in that process are going to receive an email telling them where they are in that process. And so sorry you didn't make it to the next stage, but you know, we may come back to you, or you know, you either should apply again or not. And there's a personal commitment I've made for those who are in the advanced stages. They will get a personal call from me, the chair, or others who want to join me to actually talk to the candidates, so that if we want them to apply again or we thought that they should be encouraged, they don't feel let down. That's the biggest problem that we've heard about the ability of the NOMCOM not to reach out to its candidates. We want to know our customers. We've had training. So me and the GNSO, I know nothing about the ALAC. So we had training done so that the ALAC could explain to us what the ALAC is like. And the GNSO and the CCNSO and vice versa, and also board governance training and confidentiality training. And also yesterday, training on how to do a good interview or to assess an interview. All of this has been done this year. We did have interview training in the past. I think this year we brought it back. And there was a cart before horse problem. It happened last year where we used to make our final selections as if we would do in Panama this year. And then once we've given those names in, it would go for due diligence as it normally do. But what happens if the due diligence comes back and says, sorry, this person can't go through? What do we do then? No one's interested to come on a call. We're not meeting again. We can't do the selections again easily. People are just busy doing other things. It becomes really difficult. So we decided, no, we're going to have due diligence for all the people who are going to come to Panama this year prior to them coming to Panama, so that when we make our decisions in Panama, we're done. There's no further evaluation, selection. The selection is done. We're not going to be a Nomad website anymore. We're going to have a standard static website, nomcom.icann.org. And Nomad might be a good one to go with, yes. And then we were asking every single ACNSO, we put this in our operating procedures, which wasn't there before, saying we need to ask for guidance. So the ALAC would have received a letter and sent a response telling us what they're looking for in the people we appoint. The same is true for the CCNSO and others. And we've changed our bylaws to actually, not changed our bylaws, I'm sorry. We were abiding by the bylaws of ICANN to make sure that term unlimited liaisons don't vote in the process, but they basically participate, deliberate. And they've never done that. They've actually voted. But what we're doing is at every single stage, when a person goes from stage one to stage two, i.e. that person is eliminated, the fate of that candidate is decided only by the voting members of the NOMCOM. And as I know, this one has generated quite a lot of questions in the audience, in the community at least. Let me be clear. The first rating, non-voting liaisons are included. They do that. And their numbers are seen. When they come to the call, the first call that we ever have, the bar is really low. There will be a proposer and a seconder, and non-voting liaisons can suggest people for those proposers and seconders to then take that person through to the next round. When you come to the intersessionals, they will be participating in every conversation, every deliberation, and also in the straw polls. I repeat, also in the straw polls, because there's word going around that they will not be participating in the straw polls. That was exactly. So they will be participating in the straw polls. But when we make that final decision, when that's one stage, that person A goes from stage one to stage two, After the straw poll has been conducted and further deliberations take place, then that vote is going to be only with the voting members. And that goes on and on. And also, by the way, in the interviews and the deep dive teams, which you know fairly well, Cheryl, they're going to be participating in the deep dives and making recommendations about that individual who is actually evaluated in the deep dives. And I've spoken too long now. I can see that Alan wants me to stop, so thank you.
I have one question. I think I heard you say the actual decisions of who will be selected will be made prior to the meeting in Panama. Is that what you said?
The due diligence analysis regarding the people who come to Panama will take place before they come to Panama, so that after we select them, we aren't told by legal that, this person has a criminal background or something.
But the selection will be done in Panama. We have been requested to select our RALO ALAC members prior, so you at least know what regions they're from. Absolutely. And our target is to have done that by Panama, but not necessarily a lot before.
It is very important that when we're in our selection process that starts basically 6th of April, it goes from 6th of April up to Panama. So if you give it to us just before Panama, it's going to be unhelpful because we might not have the people we need to appoint because those slots are taken regarding geographic diversity. So the sooner you can have this done, we can't force you to do it, but the sooner you can have it done, the better it is for us. But we will live with whatever you give us.
We certainly will not have it done by the 6th of April. The exact date to be determined.
Sure.
Hans?
You may want to consult with the bylaws because you're actually required to make that appointment 6 months before the AGM, which is then roughly 20th of April.
That's for the board, not for
That's for the board, yes. Okay.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. We're talking about ALAC selections.
Okay, no problem.
Can I just say something? I think thank you for clarifying that, Alan. It doesn't matter, actually, because your slots are geographically specified, so it doesn't matter.
Yes, but traditionally we have tried to avoid having two people from the same country within the region.
Fair enough.
And that does matter.
Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. I think the other advantage of doing the due diligence beforehand is that you'll get the results either in Panama or shortly thereafter. There won't be the Panama meeting and then approximately 2.5 months before results are released.
So you plan to announce your results soon after the Panama meeting instead of August, September, October?
Okay. So we can't announce our results ourselves. Because of the new bylaw changes, we need to send it to the EC, and then that then sends it to the board, and then it's announced. But it's really then up to ICANN or to announce it when they do. But we will be sending our list in basically right after Panama, in Panama, at the end of Panama.
Again, you're conflating the board selections with the other selections, which don't go through the empowered community.
So we're trying to be consistent, so we're not going to just reveal only others and not the board. We want to do it together. That's why.
No, I understand. I'm just making it clear that we have the words right. Hans?
Yeah, so the mechanics after we've made our decision is that we go to the candidate and tell them that, and then they finally accept. So that could take days or weeks. Hopefully it won't, since we will do it immediately after Panama. They will still be in the mood that they remembered that they applied and for what reason.
But it happens to affect another decision we're making, so let me be really clear. You are saying we will know the ALAC appointees from the NOMCOM relatively soon after the Panama meeting, as opposed to 2 to 3 months later. Without being specific on the date.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. That does change a critical issue that we have to resolve, specifically that I'm leaving and we have to appoint a new ALAC chair. And the question is whether the new NOMCOM appointees are eligible or not. If they're not, if we don't know who they are, they're not eligible.
Just as a matter of trying to be safe on this issue, I would say wait about 2.5 weeks post-Panama, but it won't be longer than that.
But that's not critical. Do we have anyone else? We are a little bit over time. We did have a tiny bit of fudge factor in our next session, but we've now used that up. But if there's anyone else who has any comments, either the NOMCOM or ALAC or regional leaders, please.
No? Okay. All right. Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
And I understand David Conrad is in the room somewhere. There he is. And it is with great pleasure that I welcome David Conrad. David and I have a bit of a history going back 20-odd years, so I'm always delighted when we have him as a speaker. And I will not do a lot of words, but it's over to you.
Thank you, Alan. And I apologize if I start coughing or anything. I seem to have picked up a bit of a cold. My voice is now better than it was this morning when I had to do a talk to the PSWG. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak about the KSK role. There we go. And I suppose this technology might actually work. Yay. Okay, so for a little bit of background, when we signed the route in 2010, we promised the community that we would roll the key, that is, change the key, after 5 years. And we started the process of rolling the key, oh, thank you, in 2013, and then sort of suspended that a bit because of a small event known as the transition of the IANA functions contract. We thought it might be better to not throw all of the cards up at the exact same time and instead, you know, throw them up once and then later on throw up the second set of cards. So we, when I rejoined ICANN in 2014, we did some preliminary analysis and sort of restarted slowly the KSK role, eventually sort of picking up steam and then moving along quite rapidly until about September 2017. In that month, Dwayne Wessels at VeriSign, who had published a internet draft, a standard, an RFC, originally published in April of 2017, first got implemented in one name server in August of 2017. He started noticing data from that implementation of the draft or standard that he'd written that was indicating some surprising data. We had anticipated that by that time, by September of 2017, we would not be seeing resolvers that were only configured with the trust anchor that was built in 2010, but instead would be seeing both the 2010 trust anchor and the 2017 trust anchor, which would mean that those resolvers would be able to change to the new key without any interruption of service. But at that time, in September, Dwayne reported that he was seeing between 7% and 8% of the resolvers that were reporting their key to be configured only with the 2010 key. And if we had gone ahead as originally planned, which the plan was to start using the new key on October 11th, 2017, then that would mean that the 7% to 8% of resolvers that we knew about would be unable to resolve anything. They would immediately start failing, and all the users behind those resolvers would be unable to look up any names on the internet. That thought that would be sort of a bad thing to happen. So as I was just about to go on vacation, because I was definitely going to take a vacation when we're about to break the internet, I was actually at O'Hare Airport in a lounge, and I told Matt, okay, so maybe we shouldn't break the internet today, and we decided to postpone. So we started looking more closely at data from the root servers that we have access to the data from. So at that time, we were collecting data from the B, D, F, and obviously the L root servers, and just started looking at what we were seeing in addition to what Dwayne was seeing. And we were getting a slightly lower number than Dwayne, around 4.1%, but it was still higher than we anticipated. We were expecting less than 0.5%. So we postponed on 27 September so we could try to figure out exactly what was going on. We started looking at the data October through December, and we actually, since we had the IP addresses of the resolvers that were reporting this information, we went and hired somebody to go and contact them. So what we discovered was the information in the WHOIS database is not actually as helpful as one might hope. Just finding, when you only, the only thing you have is an IP address, finding down the operators of those IP addresses is actually quite difficult. Of the 500 IP addresses, we were only able to get a response from 20%, or about 100 addresses, 100 operators, for those IP addresses to ask them what was actually going on. It turns out that of that those 100 addresses, 60% were actually in dynamic addresses. Now, it doesn't make any sense at all to have a resolver on a dynamic address. The whole point of a resolver is that's an address that clients can send queries to in order to get a response back. So that caused us to scratch our head a bit. 25% of the addresses were from resolvers that were known to be forwarding for other resolvers. So that means that there was a chain of resolution going. So somebody, you know, for example, I could configure my laptop with a resolver and point it to Google's 8.8.8.8. So the only address that we would see at the root server would be the 8.8.8.8 address, not the actual resolver on my laptop. We weren't able to find a single cause, which was sort of positive and negative. The positive part is that, you know, there wasn't sort of an endemic problem with the KSK rollover plan that we had had. You know, the software did mostly what it was supposed to do for, you know, 95%. It was a positive. But that also meant that we couldn't actually remedy whatever the situation was because we couldn't find out what sort of the consistent problem was. That left us with no sort of obvious path forward. And in general, anytime ICANN.org finds itself without a path going forward, we basically throw it to the community. And that's what we did. We decided to solicit the community for input. We spoke with, we had a mailing list of people who were interested in the KSK rollover technical folks. So we you know, sent a request for input and discussion on the acceptable criteria for proceeding with the KSK roll. There was a bit of discussion, maybe not as much as I would have liked, but there was quite a number of messages that are all archived if you're interested in the discussion. The result of that discussion was essentially that, well, there's actually no way that we have currently to measure the number of users that are impacted. We can get a bad but, you know, usable idea of how many resolvers are not configured correctly, but that doesn't actually tell us how many users are behind those resolvers. For example, you know, we can see, well, in theory, Google 8.8.8.8 as a resolver, but that doesn't tell us how many people are actually using Google's resolver. So that means that the data that we're actually collecting, this 8145 data, which I have to say, the fact that we got any data out of the RFC 8145 implementation that Dwayne Wessels had written was actually surprising in and of itself, because the standard was only created in April, or the first draft of the standard was only created in April. And it was only first implemented in August. So the fact that we were actually getting any signals at all out of that was actually quite surprising. But as we move forward, we're getting more and more signals, but it still doesn't tell us actually anything useful. It just tells us that some number of resolvers are configured badly. You know, what does that mean? Well, it means that, you know, somewhere between zero and a huge number of users could be affected if we did the rollover. There is a belief within the technical community that there will be better measurements in the future. There's a new standard out called KSK Sentinel, developed by Jeff Houston at APNIC. That would give us actually more information, but it's not available yet. The standard isn't even finalized yet. There haven't been any anything but prototype implementations to date. The consensus on the list was that we should move forward with the role. The data that we're getting isn't telling us anything useful. We've always sort of known that some people will get impacted by the role, and when I say impacted, it means they'll be unable to do any resolutions until they turn off DNSSEC. And the technical community's response to that was, well, they're broken, they deserve what they get. As such, we are working on and the community also said we should continue to try to contact these people to tell them to fix their configurations so that they aren't broken. But we've been doing that now for about 2 years and have not been able to obviously impact everyone, make them aware of the fact that the key role is happening. So on the 1st of February, we published a revised plan, a draft plan to proceed with the KSK rollover with the date, which might look a little familiar, of 11 October 2018, so exactly a year after we had originally planned on rolling. We, within the draft plan, did not provide any specific measurable criteria to determine whether or not to stop or move forward with the role because the community didn't actually provide us anything. We will continue to do extensive outreach, trying to tell people that if you don't fix your KSK, you will no longer be able to resolve. And we're planning, or actually are publishing the statistics more frequently. The public comment for this draft plan is currently open, and we're encouraging everyone who has interest in this to please, please, please provide input. So far, the input we've received has been almost exclusively from the technical community. And the technical community believes we need to move forward to roll the key. We would like to get a more, a broader, inclusive input from other folks, their views on this particular topic. The public comment closes on April 2nd. So please, if you have interest in this, please provide input. That proposed schedule is on 10th to 15th of March. We will hold a community feedback session. So we will actually be talking about this in great detail. In mid-April, we're going to publish a report based on the public input, anticipating any changes that we will be making to the plan. We will provide that to the board and request a board resolution to ask ESCSAC to review the finalized plan by the 1st of August. We're planning on doing another community feedback session in Panama. Hopefully by August we'll receive ESCSAC feedback, revise the plan as necessary. Mid-August, publish the final plan. On 14 September, request a board resolution directing the ICANN org to officially move forward with the role, and then on October 11th, actually do the role. Part of this is to just make sure there's a clear paper trail in the event that bad things happen, that there is a clear understanding that this was directed by the community. It wasn't just me deciding one day that it would be fun to break the internet, because as much as I would enjoy doing that, that probably wouldn't be career enhancing. The intent then is to actually have the full community input with a board resolution indicating that we should move ahead on 11 October. Just for more information, with the 8145 Trust Anchor reports, we're seeing data now from 11 root servers. Earlier data that we'd looked at was from only four of the root servers, PDF and obviously L. We're using a package that Dwayne Wessels of VeriSign had written to actually do the analysis of this. And this is what the data sort of looks like. So back before January, you know, we were averaging about between 5% and 8% of the resolvers announcing 8145 data, saying that they were configured only with a single key. In January, that percentage jumped up significantly. It's now on the order of 20 to 25% of the resolvers say they are only configured with the 2010 KSK. That means that when we start signing on 11 October of 2018, that 20% of the resolvers will be unable to resolve anything. Why was that big jump in January? Our best hypothesis to date is there was a bug in a popular name server that was completely unrelated to the KSK role. It was just a security fix that needed to be made to that software. So a lot of people went and updated their software. Remember that this 8145 implementation is very, very new. And it's only implemented on a small number of resolvers. By far, the most common resolver on the internet today is Microsoft's DNS, and Microsoft's DNS does not support 8145. So we're not seeing any announcements from Microsoft, so we're not seeing any announcements from the majority of resolvers. The only resolvers that we see are folks who are early adopters of the open source implementations. One of those is Unbound. So when that fix went out, people updated their versions of Unbound, and all of a sudden we see a pretty big spike in the 8145 announcements. Why are we seeing such a large number? Well, again, we actually don't really have a good idea. We've tried a number of ways to try to track down what these resolvers are. There is some hints that it might be sort of test resolvers within virtual machines that people set up just to run a test of software, and it's purely ephemeral. It'll go away, and if it does fail DNSSEC validation, it won't matter because it's just for tests. We aren't certain. This eye chart gives you a bunch of graphs. The important part here is if you look at the black line, it shows you that pretty much everybody is seeing sort of the same numbers, although for reasons that we don't fully understand, VeriSign is seeing less numbers than everybody else. Don't know why. This whole DNS thing is black magic as far as I can tell. One question we've gotten is how many addresses are we seeing that are reporting? This graph actually shows over time the number of reports. And these are in the number of unique IP addresses that we're seeing at the root servers. And it's, it used to be pretty low, and then around January it spikes up to, between 14 and 16,000. That's unique IP addresses per day. And if you look at cumulative over time, you'll start seeing that these numbers are going growing quite rapidly. We're up to around 750,000 unique IP addresses that are resolvers that are hitting the root servers with these 8145 announcements. Another way of looking at the same data. These are within net blocks that are 256 individual IP addresses, so it indicates that some of these addresses are bouncing around inside a single net block, which would indicate it as dynamically assigned and therefore unlikely to be particularly worrisome should we actually do the KSK role. Yet another version of the same data. So this is a lot of addresses. 267,000 addresses are indicating they're configured only with the 2010 key. These are the ones that will break when we sign with the new key in 11 October of 2018. There are another 464,000 that are actually configured correctly. That's a bit worrisome. And one of the reasons that I'm encouraging people to provide public input during the comment period is to let us know how they feel about these numbers. I mentioned that we, as part of the outreach, they were publishing these graphs. You can now go to root-trust-anchor-reports.research.icann.org, and you'll see a graph that's updated weekly that shows pretty much all the stuff that I've been showing here. This might be some interesting. This actually shows the sources, the autonomous system numbers, and the description of those autonomous system numbers. And you can sort of map an autonomous system number into an internet service provider. So this shows the top 30 sources. Reliance is a very large ISP in India. DTAG is Deutsche Telekom AG in Germany. Mobili AS is the largest mobile carrier in Saudi Arabia. So, these are source IP addresses occurring that are announcing the 8145 data, indicating that their resolver is misconfigured.
David, we have an absolute hard stop on the hour, and I'd like to allow some questions, so if you can hit the high points.
Yep. Okay. So, community assistance, we actually went to the ISPCP and said, could you help us track down the operators for these addresses, and went to the RIRs. And after they got over the shock of seeing 267,000 addresses, they agreed to start helping us try to track down these. Next steps, we're continuing to investigate the 8145, trying to understand the weirdnesses that we're seeing there. We're working to contact the various autonomous system number administrators. We're encouraging others to help us try to track this stuff down. And we're going to continue to publicize the root KSK role as much as we can. One of the challenges we're having right now is that we approach various conferences to say we want to talk about the KSK rollover, and they decline the talks because it's boring. We've heard this 100 times before. We don't need to hear it again. And we want to keep listening to the community. How you can help, again, please provide input to the public comment process and join the KSK rollover mailing list. It's pretty low volume, but there have been some interesting discussions there in the past. And that's all I got.
Thank you, David. I'll note to this group that we do have someone who volunteered to write our comment. He's from the technical community. You can imagine what his answer was.
Lovely.
So we're going to have to think about it from the non-technical community.
Yes.
I will say I had a brilliant idea. I said maybe we can get users to run some sort of check to see if their resolver is compliant. The answer from David is no, no way to do that. So we can't prod them from the other end either. I have one question and then one comment. Of the 100 you did contact, did they fix the problem? Did they install the new trust anchor?
So the 100 that we did contact, a good percentage indicated that those were dynamic IP addresses that were their customers' IP addresses, and they had no way to contact their customer to tell them that they were about to have a bad day. And 25% were forwarders that were, their customers were sending queries on behalf of somebody else. So of the others, there were folks who actually did fix, and the actual concrete fixes that we heard were people saying, oh yeah, I forgot to update the configuration in my virtual machine. So it wouldn't have, if they hadn't changed it, nothing bad would have happened. They would have lost resolution until they fix the configuration. So,
if I can summarize the statistics I think you showed us, you said of those who have installed relatively new software, either because of a fix or just they do that kind of thing, a third of them do not have the second trust anchor installed. That implies the people who haven't installed the new software, the vast majority of us people who don't change anything until it's broken, chances are that a much larger percentage have not installed the new trust anchor because they don't do anything to their system. In many cases, they're probably software that some consultant installed N years ago.
Yep.
And even if you could contact the people, they'd say resolver? DNS. So that's the question we're going to have. We have two people who have put their hands up. Quick questions. We do have a hard stop. Holly, and then Hadja and John, in whatever order you put your cards up.
I'm going to plead complete ignorance here, but when you say dynamic allocation, which is increasing because, in fact, we've run out of V4 addresses, people aren't taking up V6, and is that part of the problem? I mean, you're saying you went to WHOIS, and there was a lot of data that you couldn't get. Is that part of that problem?
The dynamic addresses, if they are actually dynamic, we're not too worried about them, because a resolver is usually, when it affects other users, it's usually provided via your ISP. When you boot up your computer, it'll go out, and it's basically an address that can't change because it's configured into the end user machines. So if it's dynamic, that means that an end user machine has requested an address, it's assigned that address, and the resolver is using that address, so it's likely it's only impacting one user. So in those cases, you know, the end user might go, huh, why is this not working, and then figure it out pretty quickly. It sort of implies that it's an end user that actually knows what they're doing, so we're not too worried about those.
David, couldn't that also be, however, a resolver that's behind a NAT box? That it's not a dynamic address from the user's perspective, it only looks like a dynamic address to you.
Right, that is another concern, and one of the challenges that we have is that we can't tell if a dynamic address is dynamic. We have been talking with some large network providers who do CGN, carrier-grade NAT, and trying to help them hunt down, but these are two or three levels of indirection, and it doesn't seem like a winnable solution there.
John or Hadja, whoever is first.
Hadja Minyawi, for the record. I would like to go back to slide number 16, please. So it's 15. I wanted to ask about this difference between the total and the 1,559. So I don't really understand this part, and how's
right.
this going?
Yeah. So that difference, the 1,559, that suggests that what has happened is that they had started with only the KSK 2010, the 2010 key. And then as we were watching them, right, because we've been watching them over time, they then added the KSK 2017. So that's a good thing. It indicates that they became aware that they were not up to date, and then they added.
Okay, so it happened during the process itself.
Yes, exactly.
But I note that's a third of 1%.
Yeah, it's a little lower than we would like.
John.
John LaPrise, for the record. Thank you for coming and speaking with us, David. As a comment, I'd say I'm hard-pressed to think of a scarier presentation that I've heard as I can. From an end-user perspective, the fact that we have an unbounded number of end-users who may find themselves cut off is simply unacceptable. And I know, in speaking with the GAC, the SAC, that the board's been advised on two separate occasions in two SAC advices, I think it's 063 and 073, of actions to take, and the board has then advised ICANN.org to go ahead and implement those. As a follow-on action, I'd like to know what actions were actually taken by ICANN.org in support of those actions.
Cut off in 3 minutes.
Right. So those two resolutions were basically telling org, really, we mean it, you need to roll the key. And as a result of those resolutions, we then initiated this process. And this process is multi-year because we can only sort of touch things every quarter, and we're trying to do it in a very regimented fashion to minimize the chances that bad things will happen. So that's, 6373 sort of triggered the forward motion moving forward on doing the KSK roll, and then we hit this sort of head-scratch moment where we decided that we didn't have enough enough information. We're anticipating another resolution that says, yes, really, we mean it, go ahead, and that's what we'll do.
We have 2 minutes for questions and answers, and we have Olivier and Shun.
Start with me. Okay. Yeah, Olivier Capanablon speaking. So several comments and a question. I'm not going to go like this.
In 45 seconds.
All right. So several in 45 questions. 45 questions. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking. Okay, several questions. First one, have you considered using GeoIP databases to locate the actual owners of IP addresses, or also looking at the money trail, because obviously someone is paying for that IP address. I gather it probably is with their RIRs. I'll continue with the other questions and you can put them all at the same time. Secondly, isn't it an easy way just to, when the rollover takes place and your system doesn't work because you've got the old KSK, to just turn DNSSEC off? And thirdly, why October the 11th? Because that's a Thursday. In Asia, it actually turns into a Friday. That's not the best time to go for mission-critical stuff. So perhaps think of a Monday or Tuesday for this. Then you have the rest of the week.
So going in reverse order, because I've already forgotten the first question. The selection of the October 11th was trying to identify the least bad day and taking into account all sorts of holidays and operational considerations. The particular choice is something that was done by my team. And I don't know exactly why a Thursday was chosen, other than it, because it fit within those constraints. With regards to the second question, which...
GeoIP.
GeoIP, that was the first question. GeoIP will help us identify the countries or the specific regions, but it doesn't actually give us the sufficient information to track down the actual operator of the resolver that's causing the problems.
Money trail?
Oh, the money trail, we don't see that. We have no, the only thing we see is a singular IP address at the root server. We then contact the operator. The operator, in theory, could see a money trail, but there are a lot of open resolvers out there that have no money trail at all.
Turn off DNSSEC?
Yes, so turning off DNSSEC is the solution to the validation failing because of the KSK. Hopefully they'll turn it back on when they update the key.
Okay, Shun was in line. He has taken down his card. If I can summarize, the decision that has to be made is whether we do the rollover or not. The indications are that if we defer it another year, things won't have changed significantly. If we decide to never do a rollover, if we ever have an emergency, we are really in trouble. And that's where we sit. And if we encourage people to turn off DNSSEC, they'll probably never turn it on again.
There is that risk. We have noticed that the percentage of people who are actually doing DNSSEC validation is falling now. Some attribute that to the fact that we did not roll the KSK. So that's another bit of information.
Thank you. We have a nice, interesting discussion ahead of us, which we don't have any time allocated in this meeting to do, but somehow we'll find a bit of time. Thank you very much, David.
Thank you very much.
Someone from staff like to tell us what we're doing right now?
Hi, everyone. This is Heidi. Just to let you know that right now we have the Neuralo 11th year anniversary starting out on the terrace. It's just directly over. If you go out the doors, you'll just see the terrace directly to the left. It is starting, so please make your way.
Thank you.
After this, we have either finance or the board, or the GAC. She's not one of the people who put her hand up and said she's going to finance.
I'm going to mic this up.